coming at you with another episode of Talk About That. I am John.
What?
I'm here with my good friend, Johnny.
That's me.
Johnny is a world-traveling comedian.
Not the world.
Well, I mean, everywhere you travel is in the world. So
that's true. That's
true. Yeah.
Never been outside of this world.
Technically, we're all world travelers.
Did you see the documentary about the Flat Earth people?
You've told me about it a little bit.
It's called Behind the Curve. Yeah.
See, that's it's a weird. Double entendre. Or
it's weird. There's some odd folks out there that believe a lot
but
of
things. But don't they actually not believe the Earth is flat?
They believe it's a disc and that that we're just experiencing, like, that the sun and moon just rotate around us like a little... They have, like, they have models of it.
Do they believe that there's not like, a alternate... Did they believe it's a two-dimensional thing? Or is there actually three dimensions?
There's three dimensions, but it's like a plate, and they believe that at the edges is ice, like an ice wall. So okay. That's why when somebody says they went to Antarctica, they believe Antarctica is around the edge of the plate.
Wow.
And that no one's ever been to it. That's why we can't get to it.
I feel like you know a lot about it.
This documentary was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And in that I don't believe it.
Speaking of unbelievable.
Yeah.
Guys, we're so excited to have a very special guest in studio. All of our guests aren't always in studio, but this guy, we tracked him down.
John Stamos.
He's a world traveler as well.
He's not
but we
here.
Want to welcome this morning our good friend Andrew Wharton.
Oh, that's a good
into
guest,
into studio. Yeah. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Just glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have
what
you
a
here. Yeah. Well, you're a long-time listener.
First-time caller.
Yeah.
Yes, I would probably say I'm about... three quarters through all of them.
Didn't you the other day
you
tell me
up,
like...
You give up when we get to the spiritual stuff?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, here we go.
Stop. Some people give up when we talk about the Vols. Some people like give up when...
Yeah, it's slide forward when we talk about the Vols.
I understand. You're a Vandy guy.
A lot. We actually have down... We try to tailor it back a little bit. By tailor, I mean as if we're...
If we're creating
like metaphorical clothes for all of our listeners.
We're altering, crafting.
Yes. Words are not always my strong suit right now.
No, it's so sad. You're both speakers.
I'm a little disappointed. I really want to be on the episode that we got to talk about John saying intercourse in church.
I know
on
you missed it. It was last week.
Yeah, I know. And I had like all kinds of comments as I was listening.
Yeah, but they were going to be just as inappropriate as what he said. You're going to dig your own hole.
I like to use shorter words.
Yeah.
What are some words that you would use? Like,
really?
We don't need to get into
really.
You know, there's a city called Intercourse, Pennsylvania, and that's half their income is from tourism dollars because they have these shirts that say "I heart Intercourse."
Okay, you gave me one of those shirts for my honeymoon.
Did I really?
Yes.
Where did I get it?
When you said that have just
you ever
reminded
been there?
Me.
Have you ever been there?
No.
I've been there. You know who I went there with?
Who?
You're gonna love this.
Your wife.
No.
Okay.
Well, yes, I did go there with my wife.
But if you know what I mean.
Along with 45 senior adults from our church, the second year of our church, we took a trip there.
Were you there for?
And took a picture in front of the intercourse sign.
You took a picture, so they knew it
was like a tongue-in-cheek thing. Mama said, wait, I was homeschooled.
So you're telling me the senior adults of the church wanted to take a picture
that?
in front... Yes, I was here.
Yeah, we rode them all up in a bus, and we went to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and we went all up in that Amish country, and there was intercourse.
So,
and Middlesex. It's right next to Middlesex, I think. Isn't it?
Oh, my gosh.
I feel like such a 12-year-old right now.
There's a place called... Johnny, look it up.
There's a place called Middlesex. There's a hell, Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a hell in...
Man, I'm really struggling with
in the
this.
Cayman Islands, actually.
There's a hell in the Cayman Islands?
There is. It's like a volcanic area. Roy shot some stuff in front of there with one time. So, anyway... So I do believe Johnny, cause I just had a flashback when you said that. I do believe I have a t-shirt from my honeymoon
that says I heart
standing in front of a hot tub in Cancun, Mexico,
man.
Me wearing like this 21-year-old
man child
wearing a shirt that says I love intercourse and like looking at the camera, making like this funny face on my honeymoon. I think it had to be you that gave me that shirt.
So this is, I just got to hang out with a couple of comedians last week, and we were talking about the CCA, the Christian Comedy Association, that we're all members of, all three of these comedians I was with. And so we were talking about every CCA, they do these open mics, and these new comedians, they tell jokes, and they're usually really raw and really rough and not great yet, but they have one joke. Everybody has like one joke, it seems like, and it'll leave something with you. And this guy got up, he was probably 28. At the time, and he said, I just want everybody to know, I'm 28, I'm unmarried, something about me, I'm also a virgin. And it's Christian, so they all clapped. They clapped. And this is what he said. He said, well, I appreciate it, but it's really been a group effort. I thought that was such a funny response. My celibacy has been a group. A lot
of people
have conspired.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Anyway, Hail Michigan. Hail Michigan. That's a different thing. That's their fight song. But, yeah. No, that's great. So
I find that this kind of intro conversation is just kind of like right up my alley. It kind of pushes me into my element. It's just like what I'm here for.
Well, you do have the spiritual gift of innuendo.
Yeah. It's a spiritual gift.
I don't think it's
accidental.
Spiritual gift.
It's like accidental.
It's all from the heart. It's never intentional.
No.
Never intentional. I never say anything intentional.
I've never seen a person actually who was as unintentional about innuendo as you are, and yet... We're not going to go into all the things that have happened. So everyone just needs to know. We talk about Andrew all the time. So be like, Andrew is one of the closest friends in my life, like lifelong history. Like most of my adult life, he's been my friend. So
this is true.
15 years, and I knew him before that a little while. So almost as long as Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
So Johnny's a little longer, but Andrew's right up there. And we three have traveled and lived life in a crazy... We've all worked together. Mm-hmm. We've traveled together. We've stayed in hotel rooms together. We've done mission trips together. We've done events together. Mm-hmm. Because Andrew was with Media Shout. If you ever heard of ProPresenter, presentation software on the screen that you guys watch during church, if you go to church and you watch while there's moving pictures and other things and backgrounds. Andrew's company founded sort of that technology in the church world.
In the early 2000s, late 1990s.
Yeah.
And you traveled for how many years?
I did that for about 6 years, 6.5, 7 years, 8 years. Did it 3 years, 4 years while we planted the church. So I would travel, go do shows through the week or go on tour during the week with some band member or some group wanting to do media.
You've been on tour with Crowder and a bunch of people, right? When he was just getting going.
When he was Crowder.
When
he was just Crowder.
Because you were doing worship.
Not David.
You were doing worship together.
We did a lot of worship together. We did a lot of... we helped produce a lot of moving visual media for songs as opposed to just still graphics. So we were doing some Southern Gospel people. We were had several of those that were doing screens and projectors. And, again, this is...
But that's like
90s.
Witchcraft to them.
Absolutely.
When it started out, right? Like, what do you mean you're going to put pictures on the wall? We were talking about back masking before we started taping we were all obsessed with it. All our parents would be like, they're putting messages. And Tim Hawkins has a thing where he's like, Satan wants a hot dog. That's the message. Wait a minute. Forwards, it said, take drugs and kill yourself. Backwards, it said, Satan wants a hot dog. I'm supposed to be concerned? Okay.
So Johnny and I actually met Andrew. So you want to have a convergence. Our last guest on the show was Reggie Debs. Let's put all this together. Johnny and I were in a band called Scarlet Thread, which you guys know all about. We've never played Toyota.
Yeah, we played Toyota Van.
We never played Toyota
Van.
We played part of Parade. We played
Toyota Van is our most
clown board.
Toyota Van.
We've talked about Toyota Van. I've heard it talked about several times.
It's our most famous song, probably, actually, to this day.
Yeah.
And
maybe just in this circle, it's the most famous.
No, guys. Worldwide. We've already established what a new definition of worldwide is.
It's just a plate.
Yeah. And so on the plate. But so Johnny and I were going to, was it Cincinnati?
It's Kings Island.
It was Kings Island. Is that? Is that Cincinnati?
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
We're going to Kings Island to perform for an event called Summer Blast. And Reggie Dabbs was the speaker. Andrew Wharton was running all the media for the entire show. And I was a youth pastor and you were a youth leader and we took the youth group with us. So it was like the convergence, and that was the weekend.
What year was that? Was that like 2002, maybe?
It would have been.
It was before we started church.
It would have been one, I think.
2001.
Yeah, because it was before
one or
we
two.
Started church. Yep.
Because you started church in it was 02 when you started church.
It was 02, so this was before that.
Dude.
Golly, that was crazy.
And that was a flood. It flooded
the room. Remember that?
Yep. We had to
we had
a microphone.
All the stuff out, all my gear, all the computers. We were pulling it all out of there, moving it to another room upstairs because we came in. There was like 5 inches of water in the room. And
one of our mics had the boom stand had tipped over. The mic was just
underwater. Yeah, we met you.
I forgot about that.
I had to move everything, and our friend Terry Allen was there. He brought us in. He was your good friend. He was the district youth director who brought us in at the time. And so, like, Dane and Seth, and because Seth is Andrew's son, they were all little kids.
Seth would have been, like, 9, 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, total little kids. And We
moved to a different room. I remember we sang Let the River Flow, and we thought we were being so clever.
Oh, yeah.
Let's sing Let the River Flow. They'll love it.
They eat this up.
But that was like when we met Andrew, and we kind of became friends. And that's when we kind of connected with Reggie for the first time. Of course, Andrew was roommates with Reggie in college.
Yeah, Reggie and I go back to our childhood when we roamed the hills of a camp together young junior high kids.
And then you knew each other before college.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure I knew that.
Yeah, we knew each other when we were kids because we converged every year at this camp. And then from that camp, we would, you know, see each other maybe occasionally if I was in East Tennessee or something like that. And then he went to Evangel. And then I, through my course of journeys of sundries of schools I attended, ended up at Evangel and saw Reggie across the parking lot one day. And he said, hey, what are you doing?
So it was totally unplanned.
Unplanned. Yeah. I was my dad was, that's a whole other story, but I was just there. I was checking out the school and saw Reggie and said, man, if Reggie's going to school here and he's inviting me to come be a sweet mate, I'm in.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. And so that's what, that's how
I saw the old picture of Reggie, too. He had a full-on, like, fro.
Oh, man, it was huge.
It's a big fro.
We would stick stuff in it, you know, like, and not tell him, you know, from behind.
Right,
Hanging out, pencil or something. Wow. So that's how long I've known Reggie.
Wow.
And then we converged later for you guys, and that's where we all met. So that's a full circle.
Yeah. And then John moved here in 2004. And that was kind of the end of our band. Because we were in a band together.
Hey, you know what? Like, well, that's so are you blaming me for the end of the band? That's what that sounded like. That's exactly what that just sounded like.
Here's what happens in Christian rock. You do the thing, you're like, we're going to do it. And then when you don't get a record deal after the first few years, you're like, one of us is going to take a job as a worship pastor or a youth pastor. And that's what happens with every Christian band. That's how I know Christian bands now. They're either realtors, youth pastors, worship pastors. Or some of them become senior pastors, but that's a step. So it was just what was bound to happen, and I didn't blame you. But 2 years later, I kept coming and visiting here, and I said, man, this really feels like I want to. We were running a nonprofit in Knoxville still, and I kept thinking, man, this is where we want to be. I don't know why, but I want to be here. So we moved, and we didn't really have a job yet. So I met with Pastor Andrew, and I was just like, he was like, well, I can't offer you a job on staff because we don't have much money, but we have money to clean the building. Like, we're all just kind of parting it out, and we're each like doing a section of the money that we would pay somebody to clean the building, but you don't want to do that. And I was like, I'll do it. I was really like looking for a way to kind of get here. And I thought, well, I'll teach you. You can teach Sunday school. You can do whatever you want to do. And then, you know, and I was getting my correspondence, like ministry papers through an online thing. And I was like, well, okay. And it was just, that's how I got here. So I mopped floors and cleaned toilets. And
that freaked me out.
Yes.
Not that you were cleaning toilets, but what freaked me out was that there were people in the early days of the church journey who would like sell out and come to clean toilets.
Yeah.
And you're freaking out thinking, oh my God, is this person going to be able to make it? Is this person going to survive?
We're taking them on to raise.
They're coming here and now I'm responsible to make sure you eat. But man, what if they don't like it? And then you're changing your whole life for maybe something that I'm doing.
We had like a little bit of savings. We found a house and threw some of the money at that, and because we knew we weren't be able to like. I thought if we started out renting, I thought we'll never be able to get into a house because I just had resigned like we're going to make X amount a year from here on out, and I'm just going to do this. I'm going to sell out to this idea. So we didn't know what the future was. Curry didn't have a job. My wife didn't have a job at all at the time. And then she worked for Wilson Bank for a while. And then she worked with Royce at Media Shout for a while. She did that for a little bit. Yeah, she answered phones and did that.
I don't think I remember that.
I don't remember that.
She called churches and stuff. Who's your presentations? I don't know what she did. But it was a click. You know, it was a lot of those. But it was scary, but it was an exciting time. And I just felt like this was home. And this was such like you guys fostered this huge culture of dreamers here. And Nashville's got its own energy, too, that maybe you weren't aware of because you've always been here or you've been all around. But I'm saying you come from Middle Tennessee. And so there's an energy to Nashville that isn't necessarily present in East Tennessee as far as like, well, let's go. If there's a positivity, you know what I'm saying, that I felt. And plus just the culture of this church. I mean, I just felt like welcomed. I remember you helped pay to move me.
Oh, yeah.
You helped pay to move me. You bought me a fridge. I couldn't believe it. Wow. I was like, I'm going to do custodial staff at this church. And they're like, treat me like I'm coming on as executive pastor.
I think we pounded you, too.
I think you did. I remember it was a lot of stuff. It was you guys helped me move in. It was really cool. And it just took the edge off of that. Any fear that I felt, which definitely there was some anxious times, but it was exciting.
It was so. I'm going to tell you, it was a lot of fun. Those. Yeah. Because we were all just still trying to figure out what we were doing and where we were going.
Yeah.
We probably hadn't been in the building more than just
a couple of years. Couple I mean, years a year and a half. Because when John moved here, y'all hadn't even built it. So you've been in a building about a year when I moved in.
I was doing construction two years before you got here.
Yeah. We would do events.
Yeah.
And we would work on the building all day because we built the church ourselves.
Yeah.
Like physically outside of the steel and the concrete. We did, we did everything. We would work all day and then try to plan something late in the evening and then have some event. And I remember we had this one event, and I think I'll never forget it. We had this one event. So I think the band came down
and played. Yeah,
I remember this. And played down in the field. On the truck, the side of it folded down.
It went down. The winch comes down.
Oh, my gosh.
And I remember going down there. We had done all the work because obviously in my state of positioning at that point, I was doing all the media stuff.
Yeah.
Was setting all the mics, whatever. And I remember going down when it was over, and I walked up on you guys, and y'all were just going at it. And just not like mean going at it, but like funny going at it. Like Johnny was slinging them left and right and innuendos. And I don't think I was slinging. Well, yeah, you were, Johnny. It's like you were with some innuendo against John, and then John slinging some back at you and the other band members.
It was just a sarcastic bunch.
It was just this really amazing homogeneous connection between all of y'all. And it was like, to me, from kind of the outsider looking in, going, man, this is really powerful stuff that I see in these guys. And that's the same thing that I saw when we were up there, which led me ultimately to call John to come be a part of the church. But seeing you there, when you said, hey, I gotta come clean toilets, I was like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I? It was because there was something there that I wanted to see.
Well, yeah, Foster. And I think within 6 months, I was doing the building and I was doing college ministry at my house. And then I did that for another three or four years. But about 2 years in, I remember I came to you and said, I need to go to part-time. I started doing stand-up. And I said, I can't get work because I have to be back here on the weekends to get the building ready. There's no way I'll ever be able to get. So I was starting to get some work. And a lot of the work was coming from you guys, like our network of people, Terry Allen. But it was growing. And I was like, what's going to happen? And you were like, oh, we'll find somebody to clean the building. You just keep doing college ministry. You like were totally unrattled by it. And
it was called the living room.
Yeah, that's right. The living room was my college ministry. But you were so supportive, and I'll never forget that. Like, I think a lot of pastors lead from a fear. They're afraid to put brilliant people around them. Not that I was brilliant, but I'm saying I'm just giving you the example of some pastors that lead from the fear-based model of like, I want to make sure that everybody underneath me is like a little less spiritual than me or a little bit less knowledgeable than me so that I can feel superior. I want to make sure the spotlight stays on me. If somebody does something great, I want to make sure that I do something even greater. You just had this different style. And so it really meant a lot to me to see like the level of support that I felt, or even early on. I mean, I think I had two dates on the calendar when I went to part-time, which I gave up my insurance doing that.
I remember when you came in and you said, hey, listen, I can't do this.
I'm a shooting star, Pastor.
I just can't.
I'm out of here.
I got to be able to go be away on the weekends.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, absolutely, you know, stay the course, do the living room piece.
Yeah, because that was
and then
Tuesday
I remember
nights.
Saying, then I remember saying as you walked out of the room, God help him.
he'll be dead in six months.
He's really not funny. You know, whatever it was that.
Oh, God.
That was great.
It's hilarious. No, but yeah, I think that was cool. And I remember we did a minister's retreat, and we were in Sewanee when I told you that.
Is that the one?
We were all staying at the lake house.
Was that where I made y'all sing "Friends Are Friends Forever"?
I don't remember. Probably
I think it was because we talked about hating that particular because it, you know, it's kind
of
really.
When you were doing the youth thing,
yeah,
no, that was in Gallenberg.
Was that Gallenberg?
Swanee was our staff
retreat.
Was
the lake.
We were packing up the dreams.
That's
God's planet.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We did that for you up in
That was Gallenberg. Yes, I remember this.
Because we had talked about it in the fall.
Yeah, I hadn't moved here yet. Yeah, I had not moved here yet.
That was one of the ways we got you. That's when you and him probably really had some.
We really did.
We had a good time that weekend. Gosh. That's right. I forgot about that. I just remember that night we were talking about just songs to do. And I said, guys, we'll just do something at the end. Just kind of follow along with whatever wherever I speak back.
Remember who played keys that weekend? Casey.
Casey Martin. Yeah.
Casey Martin. And my favorite thing.
We lured him that weekend, too. You and I were luring people.
Casey would do my favorite thing, and I've seen other people do it since then. I never had seen it before, though. But if he was playing, because he could play really crazy all over the keys. He was an amazing player, an improvisational player. And he'd be playing. I remember one time we were doing a baby dedication, and he was dun, 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 and it just like it sounded like he was just playing original stuff. And he'd go dun 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 dun. I was like, "Is he playing? Isn't She Lovely?" Like that. He's playing Stevie Wonder. One time he was like dun 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 dun. I was like, "Is he playing Mickey Mouse? What?" And he would just like wink. He would look out to see if anybody was noticing that he was just totally like playing the Nabisco commercial.
I used to work in Wind Beneath My Wings. To some old, if a preacher was talking extra long, I would start working it in. I work in Wind Beneath
John,
My Wings.
We should use that. We should
but put a few minors underneath it, you know.
Just
where
make
no one,
it a little bit. Yeah. Change just, every third note or whatever.
Just look and see if anybody, you know. That's kind of an old. It's kind of an old piano player altar call type thing in our culture.
Yeah, I saw a documentary about Sam Kinison, the comedian who's famous for being like a screaming, you know, crazed
like
person.
A ranting guy.
Yeah, and lots of curse words. But he was the son of a revival preacher, and he used to play piano in the revival, and that's how he got started. He was an amazing piano player. And he said when they would do the offering, he would sneak in the music from The Sting. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Oh, as they're passing the hat or whatever.
It was the, I will say that having two people, for me, it's always been unique to put people together that function together.
Yeah.
So to bring the two of you together, there was just a natural energy that happened just outside of the normal routine of work, the job, the mechanics, but just the fun. Because you guys have produced so much amazing content. Y'all probably haven't talked. I know you haven't talked a lot about it on the show, but we kind of, one of our things in church has always been to, you know, kind of put forth funny, fun stuff. And boy, while you were cleaning, before you took the big leap into full time national hero comedian, it was like this.
Say more things.
It
like
was
that.
This. It was just this constant. We were living in it. We were living in you now. We had you to ourselves.
Yeah.
And it was so fun because every 3 or 4 weeks we'd produce something that was so good. I mean, I started thinking about the song you did for the city. I did the census song, and we did.
So they were doing a 10-year census, and the city asked us to help. So Johnny and I wrote a song.
To the theme of Where Everybody Knows Your Name, from Cheers, the Cheers theme.
So I played it on keys, and it was, I'm sure you remember all the
lines.
It
was, the city's going to grow, so we've got to know your name.
So we've got to know your name. Yeah. We know these yellow shirts are lame.
Yeah, we had
these
yellow shirts for the census.
And the mayor, and like they were all here. And we made fun of them the whole time in the song.
And then the last part was, get on the roll so everybody knows your name. And then I used to say, get on the roll or we're going to make you ride our train. Because we just added this terrible little train that goes from Mount Juliet to downtown. And everybody was so proud of it, but it's just a junky little, you know, three-car train. And so that was my, like,
I
thought the city's going to be offended.
I like the Music City Star.
The city said, come do this at City Hall.
We did. We went to City Hall.
And they put it on city television.
That's right.
We went and did it, yeah. Did we wear the yellow shirts?
Yeah, we did. You had the yellow shirt.
Guys, that's just one, like Andrew's right. Like, there's so much. More, we've forgotten more than we can remember.
My favorite.
It's that much stuff.
My favorite, hands down. And I texted to y'all about every year or so, because as I'm scrolling through my iTunes, it'll just naturally come up. It's called, you know, I Put the Pee in Your Picnic.
I Put the Pee in Your Picnic.
For the dog that came over to church. And
We have a neighbor to our church, or did, who's a country music songwriter, singer-songwriter named Andy Griggs. And he has a blue tick hound. Is that what it was?
It was a coon dog.
Yeah. And so we had this outdoor picnic and his dog got loose, came all the way over to our church property. And
he was just milling around.
He was
milling
around,
people were
eating off
him.
People's plates, and then he relieved himself into the handbag of one of our people who went to our church. And so I don't know why, but that person I think that person was upset. Were they upset?
They weren't upset.
They weren't upset. But so he was on the radio, Nashville radio, the next week during an interview, and she called in.
Somebody called in. Yeah,
she called in, and
which
said,
was mortifying to us. We were embarrassed.
Yeah, we thought maybe he thought we were upset. We weren't. She wasn't. But just to make sure.
We wrote a song,
a country song
called I Put the Pee in Your Picnic. And the hook of the chorus was, is that my purse or urine? And it's so stupid.
And we had a barking dog in there. I think I produced that one. It was
great.
But we cut it. And
we had a gift basket of dog biscuits
and all
everything.
Kinds of stuff.
And a CD with that on it. And he probably thought,
He loved it. He called me. He called me the next week.
When are y'all going to actually preach the gospel and get people saved? This is what you do all day.
This is our plan.
Okay, you're telling me he called you? To this day, to this day, I thought he never said a word.
Oh, man, he loved it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me that?
I don't know. What does it matter? I mean,
shout out to Andy Griggs.
Andy was great. And yeah, okay. It was pretty funny.
Remember the Bolivia song? By the way, I could pull
I forgot about the Bolivia
I have them
too.
All on my computer.
Oh, my gosh.
I could pull these in.
Yeah, but they don't want to hear 3 minutes of a Bolivia song.
No, they can hear like a chorus or something. Yeah. But I could pull in. So Johnny and I, we've been to Bolivia to build a children's home in Cochabamba. I think I've been 6 times. Andrew's probably been at least a dozen. Yeah. Johnny, you've probably been, 3 or 4?
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the best times of our life have been down in Bolivia. And so Andrew is like, so it's hard for the listener to understand that this guy makes moments better than anybody. Like it's just his thing. Like if you're on a trip, especially he's going to make a moment and make something special about it. Whether it's a shirt, but it won't just be a shirt.
Like yellow
we're going to have an event in which the shirt is given to you and people, I mean, and he's making spiritual moments, and it's been amazing. So one of the things he'd always do is he would, like, basically require us. We'd be out laying brick or doing something, you know, and he's like, come in about 2 days before. Now, look, guys, we got to write a song. Because we always have a big night at
the end of the week. It's like, to me, it's like remember the Partridge Family where they would have their life experiences, and then at the end of the show, they write a song about it together as a family, and it becomes a big hit on the radio or whatever. Yep. That was us. We had to have our Partridge Family moment.
Yeah.
Where
every trip.
Yeah. So we would do a wrap up song. And sometimes it would be a rap.
We actually reprised a couple songs into a rap. We took the course in the previous year.
There's anything better than white dudes rapping
in a foreign country. Yeah. But we did a song called Don't Flush Paper Down the Toilet.
Right.
Because when you're in South America, you can't flush paper down the toilet. You'll back it up. And it had some crazy lines. What was the?
I don't remember. I remember one of the raps was about Pastor Freddie. We ride with Freddie. He drives like Mario Andretti. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Because you'll be throwing up spaghetti. You'll be nauseous. Man, I urge you to be cautious. And it's the rainy season, so you better bring galoshes to the Andes.
There ain't a room for pandy. Oh, wait. There ain't no room for pansies.
Yeah. Better watch out because
Alpaca's going to stampede.
Yeah. Folks are sleepy because the Andes, they were steep, see? And Leslie squeezed the Nino's anger covered in their pee-pee.
Because a girl got peed on.
It all comes back to pee, you guys.
It's all about, why is it all about you?
And it was in the flow, guys. I assure yourself, I was rapping like, I was spitting alpaca.
But let me just say, I know that was great stuff. It really was. I mean, you know, even though it was in the moments and it was all one-off stuff and it's done, one and done, and you're never going to hear it
again. Well, that's the thing. It's not a thing you can ever, because it's like, how could you ever?
You can't convey the humor of the moment. I mean, everybody's roaring in the
But that's
the
why
floor.
It works. It's almost
so
like, it's almost like what you'd see on like, Whose Line Is It Anyway, where you're making stuff up in the moment. And it's so funny because it's in the room stuff.
Absolutely.
I always say that about when I travel with Tim, that people always go, why does he not make you go first? And the honest reason is Tim likes to be the first one to make fun of the room because he doesn't want me to burn all that because he wants to go, your chandelier looks like a spaceship. He wants to say all that. And if I go first, I'm going
to
do it.
You get to do it. Yeah. But you know what's sad is that your listeners will never be able to receive the joy of the picture of the two of you because you also dressed in costume for that. You had paper plates and aluminum foil around your neck like they were chains.
That's right.
Did we have
like
rap names?
We did.
You did.
Because it's the Bolivian Hope Center. I was run BHC,
mm-hmm.
and you were Save Your Safe.
That's exactly right. The best.
And there were things we can't do the thing. You down with BHC? Remember that? Yeah, you know me.
You down with BHC? Yeah, you know me. You down with BHC? Yeah, you know me. Who lives at BHC? Orphans.
And We didn't use that.
We didn't do that.
But Johnny did that.
That was a first.
There were so many inappropriate outtakes that we couldn't do. Because we didn't want to. It was like you're having fun with this horrible thing happening in these kids' lives, but the kids are loving it because we're helping them. And so, but there was always that line that's serious, what we're doing here. And any given moment, the government could shut down.
Yeah, I know. They just elected a communist. They had free elections, but they elected a communist that was going to shut down everything.
And he just keeps changing the rules now and just keeps being the president.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's always, God, Bolivia was cool. A lot of great stuff.
I have a friend on Facebook who lives in North Dakota, and he just took a trip to the Living Hope Center with his church.
Really?
Nice. So it was kind of cool to see. I was like, oh my gosh, you're going to have a great time. And yeah.
But it was so, it was such an environment of health. Of health, and we're gonna recognize what we're doing. We're gonna try to encourage the people that were around. I mean, you know, we obviously clearly missed a lot of things along the way, but you know, that's a conversation for another day. But the camaraderie of what we did and the all in, because you know they probably don't even know. Additional to this, we would do a video every year at the big thing we do this every year called the State of Church Address. It was kind of like the reprise of the year, but more than that, it was just kind of, hey, you know, we're still all doing this. We're still in this together. And so I would make you guys produce
we had a top last year. Every year we had a top.
Every year had
it.
To be better than the year before. And we had these things that we would introduce every year. And then Jeffrey Holland, our video guy, he would bring stuff back every year and bit it in so that you know, every year the bit's in there, but now there's new stuff. And then
it's self-referential.
By the last one, it was like 2 hours, you know.
I remember the year, the first or second year when we realized he realized how to make an explosion, like a real fireball that wasn't CGI. And I go, what are we going to do? And he said, we get a camping propane tank, like the little green, and we put it out in a field and we put tea light candles around it in a circle. And you light the tea light candles. I go, this sounds really dangerous. And then we had another. Weston would shoot it with a .22.
Yeah. And it would go off.
From off camera.
From off camera. It would just explode.
And it would just put a hole in it, and all the gas leaks out all at once, and it hits the tea light candles and makes whatever. So however big you want your fireball to be, you put the tea light candles that far apart. So we started mastering this. I remember the last one we did was like two tanks. We put two tanks side by side and shot through both.
Was this the one where the dinosaurs are fleeing? Thomas Jefferson's fleeing the dinosaurs with machine guns as everything explodes behind him?
Yeah.
Because that was, again, that kind of stuff happened in these episodes.
Yeah, because we had to use what we had around us, which was we had the two dino outfits that we had bought somewhere that we used for like kids' carnival and stuff and kids'
crusades. We had a George Washington out. We brought him in quite a bit. He was commonplace.
He could be
year.
Thomas Jefferson or George Washington, whatever we needed.
My so favorite weird. Explosion piece, though, was whenever we would also take a missional journey, which was quite frequent, we would always produce video pieces for that, which were, you know, sometimes we would spoof those a little bit. Sometimes they were more serious, but all these other ones were spoofs. But my favorite was when we were doing the explosion. I think it was the one where y'all were mocking me for falling off and breaking my arm in Bolivia.
Yeah, that's right.
And Hubert Gomez was playing me.
Mocking's a strong word.
Yeah, no, mocking is the word. That is
what
you
did. Here's
what
happens in our church. Everything's like, is he okay? Is he going to be okay? And once we know you're going to be okay, like, it's on.
Y'all were writing it while I was on a plane coming home, and y'all were still there. Don't kid me that. I know what y'all were doing.
We were in Bolivia, and just so everybody understands, we were in Bolivia, and it was the biggest trip we ever took. It was two teams big. Andrew took one team down because we were opening the Hope Center. I brought the second team down and met him, and the trip was marred with many, many adventures. I'll put it that way. Like, we got detained at the airport, me and two kids, between two Bolivian cities. And I only speak enough Spanish to communicate with small children. Like, it's not like it's a real – it's like literally my wife doesn't know where I am. She's got kids on another plane, just knows I'm left back somewhere in Santa Cruz. And there's no internet. There's no cell phone. So, you know, I'm just with two – it was amazing. Actually, pretty amazing story. God led me to the one English-speaking guy who worked for the airline in the entire airport who happened to just want to help me, because no one helps you. Like, no one helps you. They just mug you, you know. And so we get down there. We open the Hope Center. Andrew's going to stay the second week. He's sending that first team back. He's going to stay with us. And I'm kind of running the trip because the second team's kind of youth. And it was going to be like you and your family just kind of getting to hang and enjoy that week.
It was the first time that my family of five had ever been gone out of the country before together as a team.
And the last
one.
So the first morning we were going to the work site before we can get there. Well, as we got there, we got news.
We'd opened the home. And a bunch of us had stayed at the home with the kids that night because that was their first night in the home from the prison.
Like they never had a shower before, never brushed their teeth.
It was amazing.
So, unbelievable. Well, Andrew was climbing a ladder to put something up in the Pauichi.
We were building this basically an outside covered hut, but they called it a Pauichi that's got a high roof. And so,
he lifted something over his head standing on the top step. Is this correct?
Yeah, however you want to believe it.
Standing on the top step, lifted over his head, and it was a severe fall.
It was on a ladder.
He came down.
Top step of
the
ladder. Where it says,
shattered the wrist.
He came down straight. Honestly, should have died probably. I mean,
hit your head on the concrete.
A 13-foot fall. in a third world country, broke his wrist, his ribs, broke one of your legs, right?
Yep. Legs, ribs, head.
Hit his head.
That's why I have this problem now.
He can't pronounce his R's.
They took him to a hospital, and so my wife was down there. They took him to the hospital, and the health care was so...
It wasn't awful. It was okay.
They're developing.
Yeah, I was okay. They did the best they could. They had X-ray. Johnny, speaking of, let me tell this is a sidebar story.
Yeah.
When they took me in the ER room there, which was just a room, and then they said, "Look, we're going to get an X-ray." So the guy that comes to take my the aide to roll me back to take my X-ray.
Yeah.
The dude has a machine gun strapped to his chest.
Oh wow.
And he rolls me out of the room. He's like pushing my buggy down this long hallway, down another little hallway, into this tiny, just nasty, putrid, throw-up, pink-looking room.
Oh, man.
Here's an X-ray machine from like 1950.
Wow.
And then he stands up over the top of me with this big gun hanging in my face and sets me over onto the... Yeah, I thought death was really close to me at that moment in more ways than one.
You're like, is the safety on this? Well, I remember we got off the plane and on those missions trips, there'd be a line of guys with machines as you get off the plane. It's serious, serious.
I mean, it's not like, again, people go all the time and we've never, God always blessed us, but on that trip then, they put a cast on you, but they put the cast on too tight. So he had compartment syndrome. So he's in such pain. And we had Jason Henry and my wife there, two medical people, and we had to take a Sawzall or a Dremel.
We were drumming.
Had to cut his cast off while he's sitting there in complete. And we're just trying to get him home because he had surgery. So he had a
24 hour trip home, right?
Yeah. Holding it. Because he had to sit in airports because there was no tickets available, all these things. Anyway.
I heard y'all strumming the guitar as I left.
We were already writing
already
words.
Already writing the songs and then writing the video.
No. We're like, what rhymes with compound fracture?
Well, so I was left to finish the trip. Of course, I had two of your kids with me. You took your youngest Aaron home, and you and Julie left. So, of course, your kids are terrified, and I got them there. And we finished the trip, and we went into the marketplace. So it's the same trip.
Right. Yeah. This was the same trip.
We get out of the market.
All right.
We go into this place. It's kind of the one touristy thing that we do, but there's only a certain part of the market.
The concha.
The concha. There's certain aisles.
Market is not the right word. I want to say it's like 6 miles.
It's crazy.
Of just these rows that are within, they're like back to, they're like a storage shed.
It's like a flea market.
Like storage sheds.
It's like a flea market meets a Costco, meets a outdoors.
Yeah. Meets
food and farmer's market. And
yes, they're exchanging
everything.
Yeah, that's where you go to like get your Bolivian souvenir, but you can talk the guy down too.
But it's also where the Bolivians go. And there's also very, very dangerous like black market stuff going on. And so the missionaries know which aisle that's happening on.
Yeah.
So we always take the kids down the right aisle.
Stay on these two aisles.
And you surround the kids and, all those things. We had all these systems to make sure everybody knew where everyone was and everything. Right. So we get out. For some reason, everything happened on the trip. The trucks broke down.
Remember that? Yeah, trucks broke down.
And so we decided the last day. I already had Andrew almost die on the trip, but got him home. Now the trucks are broke down. So we were sending kids around with an adult in taxis.
Oh, okay? To go to
three at a time, yeah.
Well, the whole trip we had to use taxis.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
And so I got them in taxis. I got them all out. We got them all the way through the concha. We got them all back in. I'm thinking to myself, Jesus. This is one of those like, Jesus, just let me get these kids home. It's the last day where they're finally board the plane. I've already been detained at an airport. Everything's happened. And I feel somebody, dude, I was really impressed. I feel somebody bump me because it's a crowded street. I'm letting a kid out of a car to keep him from getting run over. I'm doing my job. I feel someone bump me one way and then bump me a second. And I had my wallet in my front pocket. So I immediately went and felt for it.
Gone.
And it was gone.
Yep.
And so they literally pickpocketed me, and I didn't feel it, but I knew enough to know.
Yes.
And I saw the guys walking across this crowded third world street.
It's like Indiana Jones, bro.
It really was.
Which little basket is he going to hide in?
It was exactly that. And so I turned to the missionary, who's former military, by the way, and then the other guy who's now a missionary down there, Justin, who's with us.
And he had an M16.
But Justin was like former border control police officer. So I go, guys, I just got, and by the way, my driver's license, my ID.
Right, you can't get home.
Like, I can't, the church credit cards in there.
That was the most important part.
You can't cancel those. And so, literally, we started chasing these guys through the concha. and I got Laura taking the kids, get the kids out of here kind of thing. And I'm on this, like, I'm literally running through third world country. And by the last day, I'm speaking more Spanish. I took a lot of Spanish in school. A lot of it comes back
but
to
me. But you're using the curse words this time.
And they, apparently I knew them. And so they split up. They split up, the two guys.
Yeah.
And we can't figure out which it is. And so the missionary's chasing down one aisle. The police are looking at us and laughing. And we're drawing way too much attention to ourselves. Like, way too much. Don't do this. Don't.
Yeah.
And so I remember standing, and this guy, I ran him down. This is a crap. Why did I do this, guys?
He could have stabbed you.
He could have. I ran him down. And I got somebody with me. I can't remember. I go.
Rich was behind you.
Was he with me?
Rich was right behind you because we were talking about this story the other day.
Really?
And I
was like, ora, give it to me.
Arriba,
I was saying, aver, let's see. Show me.
Yeah, okay. Because
he said, I don't have it. And I was like, let's see. Dude unbuckles his pants, pulls his pants down, shows. I mean, these are professional pickpockets.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like yelling at him, and I'm thinking, I'm down patting him.
Oh, no.
He is.
And I'm patting him down, and the guy could have easily...
Just shanked me
right in the throat.
Yeah.
And I never would have, like, an idiot I was at that moment. But I was like in another... It was like I was in a movie.
Oh, man.
I guess we chased him down and scared him bad enough or made enough ruckus that one of the guys, we didn't even know where it came from, dropped the wallet. They hadn't had time to go through it.
Wow.
Chris Price picked it up. Mm-hmm. And we ran back, got in a taxi, and got the heck out of there. And I remember just thinking, like... I got to get out of this country. Like, everything that could happen has happened. And yet God took care of us. You didn't die.
I remember hearing about that, though. Don't go down the wrong aisles. And the country's like, what's down these aisles? I wanted to know. And I did one time, and I got a kidney. I bought a black market kidney. They didn't say who it was. I mean, I was assuming it was used.
Did you install it?
I've got three now. Okay. I've got three kidneys.
It's very, very
efficient. You can't believe how long I can go without peeing. I'm ready to see the new Avengers movie. No problem. If it's 3 hours, fine.
We've returned to pee.
It all comes back to that, doesn't it? Andrew, I do want to just...
No, hang on. We have to... We chased this rabbit for the last 10 minutes, all because when we came home...
Yeah.
We
the video we did of you.
We did this video of me.
We did a movie trailer of you. It's like a big revenge thing.
It was like, you know, they had like a time bomb ticking down.
A ladder.
The ladder was the villain.
The ladder was coming after me. It had little eyeballs.
We put googly eyes on a ladder. When we revealed the villain in the trailer, it was like this time. I can't remember. It was like this time. It's personal. And it was like... In the end, we have the ladder sitting in the pit when we blew the fireball up. So you see the shine.
Well, we had a kid dressed up like Andrew with a beard, fake beard. He's climbing the ladder.
It was Hubert Gomez.
The first time we did the body double though of a kid though too.
Yeah, because Hubert needed a stunt double.
Yeah.
Well, he had to fall.
He had to work.
Sometimes you fall.
Yeah.
And you have to get back. What was it? What was your line?
Hubert had a line. What was Hubert's
line? A righteous man falls six times.
Oh yeah, we used the scripture. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. That was a nice touch.
Soundtrack by Miley Cyrus. It's the climb. We did the whole thing.
The countdown is going on the phone, and then Hubert's walking away.
He's walking away in a trench coat with a gun, and he's walking right toward the camera.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he cocks the gun, and the bullet comes out, and
the shell comes
up, right?
Yeah. And it gets zero, and it's like it shows the googly eyes like they're bigger.
Yeah. Oh, and they get like you see the flame of the fire shine in them. It's amazing shot.
It's a great piece.
And then we were like, this
not
summer,
this time.
Yeah, this summer, every step you break. That was the name of the
every
film.
Every step you break.
And then it trailed out to every step you break.
Yeah. And somehow Jeffrey made it say every step you break. I don't know how he did it.
He
edited the
and that got such a big laugh. Like 2 years later. Later, we did the Spanish.
Yeah, we did the Telemundo version.
The Telemundo version of it. And so
we put the Every Step You Break, but the title was like, it was like now at Walmart, and it had the upside down exclamation point on either side.
And then Johnny did the same voice, but Johnny doesn't speak Spanish, and so we had someone translate it. He did the whole.
Yeah, it was intense.
And then we did Hubert. Well, so Hubert did the first one. I remember it was Hubert Gomez is Andrew Wharton in Every Step You Break. And so that was the thing. So in the Spanish version.
Right. It's all like weird. Like,
Hubert Gomez.
Yes. Yeah.
Andrew Wharton. Like he did this thing.
Well, I remember we had it when
Hubert
he caught.
Hubert is Cuban.
He is Cuban.
I remember when we had him cock the gun and the little shell come out. It went. Yeah. It had like a. It was like a bicycle horn. It was a little bit whimsical. It was so dumb.
I mean, like, we were so meta. Like, we were five layers deep.
We're making fun of something we did that we thought was funny.
so much time. And we would spend so much time do it for just one
That was
one
the
shot,
thing
man.
Jeffrey would get the most excited about. Like he would work 12 hours straight on
sleep
it.
For 2 weeks. Yeah, we'd do it all. Of course, we'd always wait the last minute. We'd be out here like the time we did I was training the new youth pastor videos. We did a whole montage where we interviewed. It was like interviewed the dinosaur, Thomas Jefferson. And we had like me, you, and our Spanish pastor at the time sitting at a table interviewing people with these ridiculous questions.
Somebody just did a joke about youth pastors. How do they come up with a formula for how many pieces of pizza? And it was pretty close to what we did.
What we did in the video.
Which we trained him to do the formula. And so if we have 30 kids, 20 are girls, 10 are boys, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, you need this many pieces. I'm like, well, how did you get that? And he's like, divide by pie. And like, that was our big dumb joke. And somebody did something very similar to that. And I'm dubious of it. Okay.
And I put him out in the bus. Yeah. And he's supposed to go between the cones. And the gag was he runs all the cones over.
Yeah.
And he looks down and he's texting. Like and it's like, taking my driver's test now, hashtag crushing it or something, you know?
Right. He's hitting every cone.
And we made him do push-ups in the montage. Yeah, yeah. We put all of the books I'd written on his back. And I was like, go, go.
There were like three at the time or four or five. I don't know what it was.
Probably, yes.
We added some more. There was quite a few.
What's funny is, you know, and I'm glad I have you here because I don't want to go into all of it, but what's funny is those were amazing times and how, like, you and I have had, like, this huge – we talk about a lot in the podcast, but you've been a huge part of really, like, a change in thought to what church should be because we had a lot of things right. Yeah. We had a lot of things right about relationship, a lot of things right about loyalty. We're very loyal. We were probably more loyal
sometimes.
To people, than we were even to what we should have been doing. And we kind of ended up people-pleasing, you know. Videos are a great example. Like, oh, we got to do this because everyone loves it.
They expect it.
They expect it. And so we all kind of, like, Jesus was our context and all of these things. And we loved him and served him and loved people. But, man, our community was just constantly not in health, you know. It was a lot of turnover all the time. And often the turnover was because we hadn't performed as well as we did the year before in some way. Well,
you train them to seek after performance.
Right. Well, you know, my kid graduated, so now this church just isn't for me anymore. You served my kid well, but so there wasn't like that deep embedded community. And you and I really went through, I mean, we kind of use these words, and I'm hesitant to say them, but we really went through like a transformation of thought that all the bottom kind of fell out on us a little bit. And so I just, as we kind of wrap it up today, I think like those memories aren't tainted for me at all.
Right.
They're not tainted for me at all. But they're amazing and amazing things we built. We often say, we've talked about in the podcast, like we built a great house. It just maybe was on not the best foundation. And we're still building a lot of that great house today, but we just kind of understand a little better a foundation of the gospel and a place, you know. And I just love for you to share, you know, any of those thoughts you have about where we were and where we're going and kind of that life of brokenness that we live now, not afraid of people, but sharing our brokenness with people every day.
Yeah, it's you know, I think if the truth be told, the most difficult thing is to, for me, has been to just stop and come to a moment where I realize, man, this isn't turning out the way that I thought it would be.
Yeah.
That's the truth. Man, I got great people around me, and we really did. We did some great stuff, and I love what you said. It's not tainted. I mean, we could probably go on all day about that kind of stuff. And there's, as many as we talked about, there's probably 6-7 times more.
Yeah.
And the people who were involved in them and the relationships are all still valuable. But in all of that, they're I mean, this is where this kind of gets to be an awkward conversation, is you have to recognize what wasn't working. Something wasn't working. Something wasn't right. And it's not because we didn't have 1,000 people in church or 10,000 people or whatever. It wasn't a quantifiable thing. Yeah. It was that if we just really just say it, that people around us weren't being changed by the power of Christ. Mm. They were living, this is kind of a thing for me right now. I'm really doing some exploration on having a form of godliness but denying its power.
Mm-hmm.
And we always think of that as the absolutes. You either are in God or you're not.
Yeah.
But it's not. I think there's degrees of that. And I think we live in this place where we can just call ourselves in the faith a lot, but not fully embracing it all, only embracing a portion. And there's so much more of it if we understand it right. And as for us, we kind of came to this place together through some circumstances that were happening in our life, do some things that were happening between us individually, and we can probably talk about, not that they were bad, but we were struggling in our relationship.
It was a test. It's like a trial.
Well, we were struggling in our relationship, one with another, but not like at each other's throat, but just distant in agenda and goal and purpose, because we were so frustrated because the people around us who we had, and I'll just cut to the chase, the people around us who we had poured our life into the best we knew how, from giving them roles and helping them do things and taking them on missional journeys and making sure that we're caring about them and listening to their heart and trying to make allocations for them and make place for them. All of a sudden we recognize that first of all, most of them have abandoned us, or that's a hard term.
That's how it felt.
That's how it felt.
Yeah.
Because I'd given all this to you and now it wasn't good enough because your kid either left the youth group, now you're not tied to us, or we said something in the pulpit that maybe you didn't think was right, or whatever it was. It wasn't strong enough to hold them. And I began to just go, man, the gospel of Christ should not look like that. Mm-hmm. And so I just went through this dark season of my life where I just didn't even really know what the gospel was about. And if that sounds horrible for a pastor, but real life transformation, then we started to experience that together. Yeah. And that's where it all started, is realizing that your life and my life had to change. And our understanding of the gospel of Christ, that I was a broken person. I had broken expectations of what church and pastoring was to look like. I had broken expectations of what being a father was supposed to be about. Had broken, not because I didn't have good parents, or not because I hadn't been in church all my life, but the thing that I had pursued my whole life was leaving me empty. Mm-hmm. The pursuit of being a successful pastor. Right. The pursuit of running up the ladder to the highest echelons of the organization we were involved in. People telling you that you're great just because you feel like that you're great because you're giving so much money. Man, we're touted well because we took so many mission trips.
Right.
Or because all these works, and all of a sudden someone looks at you and says, hey, you're living a pastoralship that's based on works. And I immediately just exploded.
Yeah.
And said, there's not a chance in this world.
That was me that said that.
That was John that said that.
In this office, by the way.
Yeah.
And then they fought.
And I just, we did. We fought for like weeks over it. And I would get so mad. But that's where I think, it's probably a two-part. It could be the first two-part ever talk about that ever.
Funny,
but
you were sitting on the couch where Johnny's sitting right now. And I remember the day. It was as supernatural a moment I think I've ever experienced out of all the things that we were raised in. I just remember the day that a light bulb came on for both of us.
Yeah, it was like a light bulb.
Suddenly going, because we did not realize how works-based we really were.
Yeah.
Because that's such a theological-sounding term. We didn't realize how much confidence we put in our job to get all this. It's like Jesus gets you to heaven, but the rest is up to us. You know, and so like with no concept of helping people become confident, not in how well we could preach or how well we could sing or how well we could make a video or how well we could put together an event or how well we could organize a program or how, and we had, and it's not a dig on the people, because people will just go where you lead them in terms of being leaders, that this had to, like you said, this had to come back to us at some point, that we were so wounded and tired why aren't, here's the real question. Why aren't we enough? Like that's what it always came. Why can't we go to the ends of the earth, stayed up all night with your family when you're in crisis, did all these things. And to be quite honest with you, we expected something in return. We expected your loyalty.
Yep.
We expected you to hang out with us. And at the end of the day, they were loyal. We were asking them to be loyal to the wrong thing. We weren't letting the gospel grow in them. The kingdom of priests were there being involved in those things in each other's lives constantly. And it meant, man,
we lived in this place.
It's hard.
We lived in this place where that if you would take care of me, if you would show up, if you would pay your tithe, give to the church, let your kids go on missional journeys, you participate in whatever, here's what I'll do for you. Here's what we'll do for you. We'll produce, I'm just going to tell you, we'll produce funny videos for you. Yep. We'll make sure that you have a good experience when you show up on Sunday and you can laugh and you can cry. And we'll be there for you when you have a hurt in your life. And you just keep telling us that we're doing a good job and we'll keep loving on you. And that was a relationship that I lived in for years. Misguided that it may be, that is where I was. And I felt very good about it because we did it well.
Right.
We did it very, very, very well. Only to realize that it was just all of a sudden when true hurt happens, when true sin happens, when people come to a place in their life when they're searching for more of God and you can't lead them to it because we're all broken and we're all hurt. And then all of a sudden you can't have the thing that helps lead them into that. That's where we were, because all we were doing was workspace.
Yeah.
And it sounds, and there's really more to unpack here, and maybe we can do that some other time, but that's kind of how we let that was the genesis for the change in our life the last 3 or 4 years, is that we both came to this place where we said, hey, basically you suck and I suck.
Yeah, we're not enough.
And we're not enough.
Yeah.
And we can't do this on our own.
Yeah.
And Johnny's abandoned us and he's on the road.
Right, he's
we
gone.
Don't have him anymore.
Good grief.
Right? So we can't be as funny as we
were. You
know
how hard it was to be funny without you?
That's my
that's
point.
That's the truth.
It's right.
I mean, not because it didn't. I mean,
Johnny, it's all your fault.
Man.
The point being, like, it was the best news, the hardest yet the best news we ever heard was when we could really admit that we were broken,
mm-hmm.
we were angry, we were bitter, we were wounded. There's a lot more to the story that I'd love to actually have you back on and tell.
And it's not that it was one thing or at this point one. It's not like these people in the church were wounding
no.
us. I want to be real clear on that. It
good
was just
people.
Where we were in our life.
Yeah.
We weren't I wasn't fulfilled as a follower of Christ and I'm pastoring a church. That was the problem.
There you
go. That was the problem. And until I came to that point personally that I'd said that to myself, then I said that to my wife, then I said that to John, mm-hmm. and then I said that ultimately to my church. And all of them went, what the heck are you talking about? And now we're going to try to take you on this journey that we've been on for the last year, trying to find a better place in Christ. So that's kind of how we led. That was an amazing day, though. And it took a while. But I remember the day that we both just were like, man, I can't do this anymore. There's not a chance.
Yeah.
I can't go on. I can't do 15 more years of this just absolute not feeling satisfied. Dude, there weren't enough accolades. There weren't enough cheers. There wasn't enough money. There weren't enough positions to mm-hmm. satisfy the whole. And man, boy, what a life it's been since. Now I can sit here with, you know, six people in the church and be so satisfied, you know, or I can sit in a room with two or three guys and talk about Christ and what he's doing in our life and how he's transforming our life and how beautiful it is to talk about my brokenness and my sin or the struggle that I had this week and know that they care for me. That's the body of Christ. And we missed that somehow.
Now you're hosting the college group at your house.
Son. We can't leave this. We can't leave
and
this.
And if you use the living,
living
room, I'm suing you
but
for
Johnny,
copyright
it's funny.
Infringement.
We moved outside. We don't call it the living room.
It's called the plate. We believe in a flat earth.
So for all the listeners out there, I, the senior pastor of the church at Pleasant Grove,
yes.
brought John Driver to be our youth pastor,
mm-hmm.
Which was one of the greatest moves we ever made. And then subsequently, he introduced me to Johnny through a series event. Johnny came, which we covered earlier.
This way I could teach the whole church a whole works-based mindset.
Right.
It was a whole idea. So Johnny shows up. And so as we talked earlier, he runs the living room. So
right.
Johnny's running the living room, our young adult ministry. And so when Johnny makes the big courageous move into going to launch his amazing comedic career, we're like, man, we got these young people wanting to do with them.
Well,
we just thought, John comes to me and goes, look, because John is all things to all men. I can do everything. Just add it to my plate.
I'm
capable.
Work harder.
I'll just work harder and stay up an extra 4 hours in a 42-hour day.
That'd be fine.
So he stays up. And he takes on the college ministry and runs it for, man, several years.
Well,
I'd
left
say.
Youth ministry in the end of 2012 and went into that.
Into that.
And you made me teaching pastor. I started
doing
Sunday mornings. And
you crossed
doing,
over for like a while. For just
I,
a
did,
bit,
I did both for
both
a little
for
bit.
For about a year.
Yeah.
And then you became
I did
a teaching
two years,
pastor.
2 years of mm-hmm. We called it NUMA. So you called it living room. I called it NUMA. And we did more of a service format in church.
So Johnny, that's the living room, our young adults ministry.
Which is Spanish, by the way, Spanish for give me your wallet.
Give me your wallet.
Yeah, it's yeah.
NUMA!
So in this last several years of this journey that God has moved us into, which is just amazing, and we were talking a little bit about, but I don't know, man, my heart has been really turned to the young adult world.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's just really bizarre. So about 3 months ago, my middle son, Caleb, has graduated from college now, and he's moved back in – well, not moved. He never left, but he's back home with us. So we've remodeled the house and given him kind of more of a little apartment feel because he's going to go to grad school. He's going to live with us for several more years unless he gets married, and we're great with that. But he's like, Dad, I just want to be a part of a gathering of young people that just young adults that hang out and just talk about life and community and share one another's heartbeat for Christ. I said, okay, Caleb, let's do it. So I now am leading the young adult ministry at the church at Pleasant Grove.
So now you're, so in 2 years, you're going to be the youth pastor.
I'm going to be the youth pastor, and then I'll be the children's pastor.
It's like Benjamin Button, church staff. You're going backwards, and you're going to be a little baby at the end.
But, dude, it's awesome. It's probably, I mean, I look so forward to it. Anyway, so I just find it funny that in this room are the historical journey, the young adult pastors.
The legacy. What a legacy of it.
And the truth is, I could not be, that's the change. That's the transformation. I could not be more excited. And I know you're hosting and we're leading it differently now.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not teaching it. I'm just opening my house and loving on these young adults.
And we're a satellite. We're a satellite of the Porch, out of which is the largest young adult ministry in the country. And so y'all do community, basically, and you use their resources. And it's a great thing if you're listening for the
Absolutely.
Porch. Tuesday nights
porch.
In Mount Juliet, send us a text or a tweet or something and email us. Whatever technology you have, really.
Yeah, please.
And we'll do our best to help you know. But it's amazing because, and you said it to me last night, like everything that we didn't know to say, we're still learning for sure. There's a lot more healthy things that are happening right now in the generations just behind us and our church as that whole idea of pastors, you know, pastors are always burnt out and we got to like, nope, that's
I quit every Monday.
Oh, we used to hear that. Yeah,
we did. And Johnny, it's so true.
Yeah.
We don't quit. It's not true that we quit every Sunday.
But that was the expectation.
But it's so true that we
bought into
that. I
remember growing up with pastors that would say, that's, quit. You people.
Yeah. And it's like now, it's so funny. My wife, even in the last year and a half, especially, she'll say, okay, you just come home from work happy now.
Yeah.
Because work is not, I have hard days. It's been a hard couple of days, by the way.
Sure.
But it's been doing kingdom stuff. Like it's hard work helping people through kingdom stuff and hard things. But I'm not coming home because Andrew hurt my feelings and we didn't have the biblical means for he and I to be honest with one another and to resolve our conflict. We do that now and that takes all that, or the church person didn't like my sermon. Mm-hmm. And so now my insecurity is tweaked and I need to go into a dark hole for a few, you know, heck, y'all know I said the word intercourse in a sermon. By the way, we did start this one. You should go listen to last week.
Yeah. Because
that will give a little context.
Is everything.
Yeah. Yeah. But point being, like, it is, there's energy in the kingdom. It's not, that's not hard, but even when we get down, like we hear pastors who have no community in their church, because you're not allowed. Was it you? Someone was telling me today, pastors aren't allowed to tell about their problems.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to go find someone outside. It's like we realize that's not the biblical way. Like we are not only in community with each other as pastors. Like we're sharing in community with other people in our church who are shepherding us.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, there's no expectation that we need to be super Christians. Like we're letting Jesus be the super one. And I know that sounds crazy. And we are horrible at it. We're not doing great at it, but Jesus is doing things in it. Like we're still like babies or little deer standing up and wobbling, I feel like, half the time. But boy, when in doubt, we go to honesty. When in doubt, we share more than less. And that's a way different way than we used to be in terms of that. And Andrew, I've been actually excited to have you on for a long time, but I want to have you again to share even more of those things. But that, it's a big day for me for us to sit and share stories together. And Johnny, you and I talk about the time. It's hard for me because I know that you're going like 300 days a year and you're always out. But you've been a part of that story and you still are. Like you're still very, very important.
All that stuff means so much to me still.
And I live in community with you a lot. You know, you and I are together and share. There's not a thing I can't share. So you guys are two, you know, of the best friends I'll ever have in this life, long term. And we sit here together. So it's kind of a fun convergence. I love it. We're all hugging right now.
We are. Group hug.
But it really is like, man, this is the, and I said that Sunday in the message. He's now in the resurrection and the life. And like, this is the life.
Yeah.
Like it's hard sometimes, but this is supposed to be like you're on the beach or on the cruise ship. It's hard. You're doing good stuff, but at the end of the day, you're tired for the right reasons. And you could say, you know what? I trust this is the life, man. And I don't know if it's going to be the biggest church or I don't know if we're going to, you know, but this is the life and seeing it happen in you guys has just been that fun thing and that honesty. So,
coming to a place where you recognize that you truly can't do this with what you thought you could do.
Yeah.
You can't do it on your own skill.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do. The more skill we get, the less we feel dependent, which is common on Christ or on God. And so, man, you surround I'll just give it to you straight. You surround yourself with people like y'all and you're the pastor of a church, because all of you are more adequate than I am in many areas, especially in the humor area, especially in the, John, in the teaching area, in the biblical study. And so as all the old models have been, surround yourself with great people. So as a pastor, you do that, and all of a sudden you turn around and you realize that, man, I can do this. I can build this great thing or build it up and realize that I don't need God in it because I have great people around me. So it's a complicated place, I think, for anyone in their life. And we probably should talk about it more just outside of the room even. But with anybody, it's a complicated place, complicated to come to a place where you just, at 55, I'm willing to say I might have not lived a full life in Christ, even though I've been in the faith since I came out of the chute, as I like to say.
I came out of the chute.
Came out of the chute.
You know, and so, yeah. So here I am, willing to say, okay, I don't know it all.
Yeah.
And man, if it means radical transformation, if it means changing my message, if it, whatever it takes, and I feel like we're moving in great, full enclosure of all the things of Christ. It's a great place. And yeah. I'm thrilled to do, I really am thrilled to do it with y'all. And yeah, I'm thrilled to follow in your footsteps.
No,
as a young adult pastor at the church.
You blazed a lot of trails, man.
Oh yeah, man. You've for always sure. encouraged me to write books. You've always encouraged Johnny to do comedy. You've always pushed, even in those days. There's so much that we wouldn't be doing.
I made
room for us.
So I'm gonna keep going because I want to tell a story on John because I'll probably never get this chance again to the worldwide listeners. Okay.
Okay.
I'll never forget the day that John walked, and we were standing out here in what is now our cafe, and I'll never forget the day that John walked in and. I think he had received one of his, I don't know, 495 rejection letters.
That's a lot.
From all of his writings that he, or whatever, solicitations and publishers that you wanted to write books in. Many, he was just, because we really thought this one might have been the gig, this one might have been the one, and yet another rejection. And I remember saying to him, you know, John, what do you think God's called you to do? What do you feel like you need to do? He goes, man, I just want to write. And I remember saying something to this effect, and I may get this wrong, but I remember saying, man, why don't you just go write? Just go write. Don't write for a publisher. Don't write for anybody. Yeah. And he did. And you went, and you started just writing. And what followed, the next thing that you began to write, that was like right before Sadie was born. Yeah. It was soon before Sadie was born. And he began just to write.
Yeah.
And he wrote, as we all,
40 Days of Purpose.
He did.
Guys,
he wrote it with, if you look real close, it's real
Rick
small.
Rick Warren's
name. Warren. This is with John Driver.
It's like a whisper. Yeah. I wrote 52 first year father reflections.
Right? Oh, right.
Yeah. Remember that? Don't you remember that?
You can actually go to the Chronicles of, chroniclesofsadie.com. Yep. You can read those.
That was the genesis.
So there should be a second Chronicles for her. Well, there's second Chronicles in the Bible. First and Second Chronicles, Society.
Oh, Johnny.
So I just would like to say.
And you want to be my teaching pastor, and you didn't know
he did,
that.
That's right. That's his place.
I'm so disappointed.
Yeah. So let me just say, I think when you talk about whatever you're doing, you know, I think Tyler Trent's the last one that you've done. I think you've got another one you're working on. Whatever. It doesn't matter. It's that concept that is exactly what has happened to us in our spiritual life. That one day, we just decided that we're going to write. It doesn't matter who's going to what it is they're going to see, or what it is that you're going to go write about Sadie. That was not what I was anticipating. But you wrote about Sadie for a whole year, because you started just to write, and it didn't matter who. I started just to say, I want more Christ, at a level I just have not experienced. And it's that, man. And so, you know, maybe I'll get to the point where I have, you know, a whole different perspective of it, in, if you will, in the analogy, multiple books of new life in Christ, if you will. So,
yeah.
And I could write my own. I can do Andrew, chapter one, chapter two.
John's got some names of agents he can connect you with.
No
your,
writing.
Your rejection
no writing.
Letters are already on the way.
Oh, yeah. So, we're going to go and get those expedited out to you. Yeah. So in the mail.
So that's my place.
Great, man.
Maynard, thank you so much for sharing today, and we have really enjoyed having you. It's been a great episode. And
don't forget to subscribe, review.
Yep.
Give us 5 stars if you feel like it.
Yeah.
It's like a digital standing ovation.
Yeah, we've had a couple guests the last few weeks, and so, you know, we want to get back to some of your questions as well. So be Please. Sure to send us
send questions
you have. We'll do our Ask John and Johnny segment. But as always, we're just honored, man, to get to spend a little time with you here on
Talk About That.
Hey friend, I'm Brooke McLaughlin, host of the Everyday Prayers podcast, a ministry of Million Praying Moms, and I'm here to invite you to partner with God for the hearts of your children on the daily. Our goal at Everyday Prayers is to help moms understand and pray God's word. Join us each weekday as we share insights from God's word for today's Christian mom. Tune in to the Everyday Prayers podcast in your favorite app or by visiting lifeaudio.com.